Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by GoToMeeting. You know, like most of America, most of the world, you're probably traveling a lot this holiday season. And probably for many of us, well, the fourth quarter is a very busy time. And you need a tool that will help you conduct business even when you're not face-to-face with clients or colleagues. So I highly recommend online meetings with GoToMeeting. Collaborate on documents in real time. Give engaging sales presentations by showing your desktop. And all it takes is a quick two-minute download of GoToMeeting. Start scheduling meetings in advance or on the fly, so your conference calls can be more productive and more efficient. Now, we use GoToMeeting and can't believe how easy it is to use and set up and the whole process. And my listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. That's over a month of online meetings for free. For this special offer, go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST, for this special 45-day trial. I think you'll really like it. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, episode number 188 for the end of November, close to the end of November, 2010. The leaves are turning colors in some parts of the world, and down here in Florida, they're staying just beautifully green with a beautiful blue sky. So sorry for all of you out there that are having to deal with all those weather conditions. You know, I'd love to jab you about that. We have a great show lined up today, something that I think you very much enjoy. So we brought back someone who is head deep not only in trading of individual equities, but also options and hedging strategies. And I thought that would be great. He is Terry Bedford. We're going to get to him in 1 second. Also want to let you know that we're getting some great emails in from you. Of course, you can email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And my last point I'll make to you before we get right to Terry is the Winning Investor's Quick and Dirty Tips to Making Money in Any Market is now on pre-sale over at Amazon, over at, at Barnes & Noble, Kindle version, Nook, all that good stuff. I think I even on iBooks, and that's my latest book. It's a very basic book. The Disciplined Investor was a little bit more advanced strategies. This kind of ratchets it back a little bit and gives you some very basic ideas on how to understand the markets, the language, the lingo, if you will, the vernacular of investing. So check that out if you have any interest in that. So let's get right to Terry Bedford. Terry Bedford is a managing director of Greyhawk Hedge Fund. Also, he writes for thestreet.com, also has his own blog. And we'll give you some more information on that. But this is a guy that doesn't just talk the talk. He's walking the walk. He's managing money every day for clients and for himself. So, Terry, how are you?
I'm great. Great.
You sound great. It's been a while. We had you on. I kind of mark the points of the market to our discussions because a lot of times you and I talk about, okay, what's going to happen at this level? What should be your stop out? What should be your shorting strategy, et cetera? And I think if I'm not mistaken, the last time we talked, you said that you are going to keep your longs on until you're going to keep your long positions and your long basic strategy on until the markets and the S&P hits 1175, at which time you're going to put some hedges on, but keep your long individual equity positions, right?
That's correct.
Yep. Okay. So how did that go?
Well, it went well for a little bit until the market went through 1175. And I mean, I was completely shocked by that. And when that happened, we adjusted, and now we are basically long. Not really short too much. Still always negative on financials. It's been an off and on good bet, but we are basically long the market now, looking for higher prices.
The problem with the financials, I think, and you'll probably agree with this because it is the problem with being short, is that you have panic moments almost every day with the financials.
That's right. Because, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, okay, you know you should be short Wells Fargo, let's say, because of the loan issues and all that. But then, you know, you could all of a sudden, the financials catch fire because last week or so, 2 weeks ago, when there was an announcement that some of the financials will be allowed to pay dividends again. And the financials went berserk for no reason. So how do you deal with that? Let's talk about that for a second. How do you deal with that? Are you saying, okay, I have my number, which is, just pick a number, I'm picking a number. 15 is the time we're going to stop out on this.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to go up and down until then. I'm going to panic. We're going to be happy. Okay, but 15 is my kind of line in the sand, and then just disregard anything in between?
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, and I guess when we're talking about 15, we're talking about the sort of XLF. And, you know, I have been watching that thing, and like you, I know the story. I know that the books are cooked on some of this stuff, and I know that it's not legitimate. They're not really legitimate plays, but
right. The
reality is that every once in a while, my phone. Every once in a while, you get these sort of rallies where people just throw stuff out the window, and you get frantic short covering. And I think that's what I've tried to do in those moments, is I've tried to really just sort of go with the flow. And if I'm going to get stopped out of some positions, then I'm stopped out and I add them again. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't know where those things go when they start going up. They go crazy.
Yeah, like, well, the problem is they're not trading on fundamentals. Let's just be honest about that. They're just not.
Yeah, that's true. It's because all technicals.
It's all technicals. You can't really tell what the fundamentals are. People love the financials because it's the classic Momo trade when it starts moving. I can remember when we latched on to Citi for a little while there just for a quick trade when it hit under 3-something, and a nice little move up. Same thing was like Sprint. Sprint, when it starts moving, it starts moving. But when it starts moving the wrong way, get out. I mean, move out of the way. So your long stocks generally, is that a fundamental call, a technical call? What are we talking about here?
Well, it's technical. I mean, when we went through 1175, I thought there was one more chance for bears to really sort of regroup in the 1185 area, because that would have represented the longer term downtrend. And that's just a simple, really simplistic technical analysis. If you were just to draw a line between the through the declining lows or lower lows, and then just I made a parallel channel with the all-time high, and I came out with a number of around 1185. And I thought if we could stay below that area, that there's a good chance that the market would roll over and we'd have a bigger decline. But when we went through 1185, I just sort of, you know, bit my lip, and I had to get long. And I started buying the typical stocks that go up when the market's going up, so Apple, Google, Netflix, even though I had been short Netflix. I bought all the ones that typically go up when the market goes up. So it's a technical call.
Netflix is another weird one, by the way. Netflix Netflix is by most people's viewpoint a short for 100 different reasons.
Yep.
The fundamentals are out of whack and way ahead of itself, and yet at the same time, you know, it goes up when it shouldn't go up. It's almost like some of these stocks are, if there's news, no matter what the news is, by the way, it could be that the company is going bankrupt, people will buy. You know, it's like just because there's news, there's something in the news. But now, we've seen that the 1175 has been tested again.
Yep.
So are you going to, is 1175 the flip number now?
It is.
Okay.
It is. If we get a close below 1175, and I will unapologetically, I won't short the market, but I'll definitely close longs. I'll close my long side exposure.
Well, I'll tell you where we are.
And if we stay below 1175, I'll short.
I'll tell you where we are. We got two of our three signals that have given us, I don't want to say short, but they've given us cautionary flags.
Yep.
Just recently. And they're not going to actually get above till we get to 1215, I believe it is. 1215 will be the next, I think 1215, 1217. That's the next kind of breakthrough of one of the two. And right now, as I see it, we have an interesting dynamic, because right now, fundamentally, a lot of the earnings have come in really well, and we could probably say there's a mixed bag, but generally speaking, fundamentals have been much better than you would have anticipated in the U.S. We still have dramatic problems around the world with China raising their rates. We have, of course, the European debacle that seems to be possibly a bailout coming in Ireland, which will make everybody so happy. I tell you, right, which doesn't make any sense, by the way. Right behind that is going to be Portugal. We think that they're going to go right after Portugal, and there's going to be the same dilemma right there, and then there's going to be a big head scratcher. And then once they get to Spain, we really don't know what's going to happen. But you got that in the backdrop that people don't like that kind of circumstance, and that does put a crimp in some of the internationals. The merger and activity news has been just off the hook. You know, and that's another problem with shorting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
You know, you go after a company like Bucyrus or Joy Global, which has had very mixed, if not frankly bad, earnings and outlooks. Mm-hmm. They had really poor earnings and outlooks recently, yet people are just buying them, and then you get a buy up by Caterpillar on Bucyrus for 30% premium.
Yep. Well, the money's cheap.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cheap money sloshing around, and these companies are taking advantage of that. And actually, there's a fellow that does bond research. The name's escaping me right now, but very good track record.
Brian Reynolds?
And, Brian Reynolds, that's right. That's right.
Yep.
And he makes the case, of course, that the action you got in the debt market after that Caterpillar deal means that there's going to be a lot more of those deals. So if you get a company announcing a buyout, taking on a bunch of debt in terms of bonds, and then the bonds going up, that's pretty bullish.
Yeah.
So other people are going to try and do the same thing.
Well, he's had the thesis for a while now. It's a very simple thesis that the bond market, well, first of all, I guess it starts with the basic tenet that the bond market investors are smart, equity investors are dumb. Okay, that's the right?
Bond market guys always say that.
Right, exactly. But that's the thesis that the bond market has got it right. The bond market has been skyrocketing. Now, you got to look at the reasons why that is. It's not just simple demand. It's obviously, of course, that the Fed is pushing down rates, et cetera, et cetera. But yet, demand is there, and demand is almost insatiable for bonds, even at these ridiculously low rates. That being the case, when you see immense amounts of bonds being issued at low rates, it's beneficial for the companies, because the companies would gladly put out a 1 or 2% bond and maybe refinance bonds they had, and then maybe put it out as a dividend, maybe put it as a stock buyback, maybe do a balance sheet repair, maybe go out and do a purchase of another company. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of great things in that area. I do agree with you. And I agree with you that the balance sheets have been fixed. The problem, though, seems to be not so much with the corporate world. It seems like the sovereign world, the sovereign debt issues, it seems like the messing around with the currencies. Could you imagine just for a moment if we didn't have to worry, because I'm sure you do also, we do every day, what's happening with the dollar and the euro? You know, we have to look every single day at these kind of situations. We can't just look at, okay, there was a really bullish, I don't know if you noticed this week on Wednesday morning, there was a bullish, almost as bullish as I've ever seen, report from the DOE on the oil inventories. Mm-hmm. Yet oil went down. That didn't make any sense. So you're not dealing with the fundamentals on that. So how do you adjust your trading to deal with this 800-pound gorilla that came to Thanksgiving dinner to give out turkeys to everybody?
Well, I mean, I've always taken the approach that you have to consider what the Federal Reserve wants to do. It's really unprecedented, is that they want to create inflation. So they're going to inflate the economy. Now, if that's good or bad, I for one think it's a bad thing, but they're going to inflate the economy. At least they're going to try their best. And right now, people are betting, bears are betting, is that they're going to be unsuccessful. And I don't think that's a great bet. I think that they're going to, one way or another, they're going to inflate the economy. And that really gives stock investors, or even asset investors in general, it gives them a sort of a put. You know, if you've got the Federal Reserve standing behind and saying, you know, we're not going to let things go down, it's hard to be short in that environment. And I think that's what's going to carry precedence into the end of the year, is people saying, you know, I don't want to really be short. I know all of the bear arguments, and they're all valid, and we've talked about this before. Like, all the things that bears say are right. Sovereign debt is a mess. There's too much debt everywhere, and everybody knows that. You know, we've got Chinese raising rates, and they're being a little more aggressive in terms of their own monetary policy lately. And nobody wants the U.S. dollar to go down, because they all have trade surpluses with the U.S., and when the dollar goes down, that's bad for them. Mm-hmm. So nobody wants any of these things, but it doesn't really matter. You're betting that the Federal Reserve is going to be unsuccessful inflating the economy, and I just don't think they're going to be unsuccessful. Even if, you know, I have very, very little respect for the Federal Reserve. I don't think that they live by their mandates. I think that some of their readings in terms of just the most basic economics is just ridiculous. But I wouldn't want to bet that they're not going to be able to inflate the U.S. economy. I think they're going to do it.
Well, whether they inflate the U.S. economy or not, they're definitely inflating something. They've inflated the pricing. Definitely, mm-hmm. They've inflated the pricing on commodities very quickly, and just from the words rather than the action.
Yeah,
I thought that was interesting. The other thing, though, is that Bernanke gave a speech on Friday, and it was all about his defense. He's going on a kind of a dog and pony show around the world. Isn't that what it looks like?
Yeah.
To convince everybody that what he's doing is the right thing, which seems a little odd that he has to be so defensive.
A little defensive.
Yeah. And Geithner did the same thing, although Geithner said that, you know, he started his discussion with last week, you know, we want a strong dollar. We have a strong dollar policy. We're like, all right, next, you know, off the stage, give him the hook and move on. But Bernanke has definitely inflated commodities and caused a lot of the problems for the emerging markets right now, where we're seeing like taxes being increased on imported foreign funds in Brazil. We're seeing that South Korea had to raise their rates or readjust. China's raising rates. And the problem, and they're creating inflation, actually. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, that I agree with you that they are inflating things. They're inflating the value of assets. That I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if it actually is going to inflate or spark the economy. That's where I think that leap of faith happens. As a matter of fact, Bernanke said it himself. He said, you know what, this is unprecedented. We know we can actually push, and we can push asset prices up, and we can do that, but we don't know if that's going to create jobs. That's the unknown. I don't see the link, by the way, to creating jobs here.
Well, I mean, I'm in Canada, so I have a slightly different view on that. If oil prices go up here, it creates a heck of a lot of jobs here in Canada.
Wait, you're in Canada?
I thought your opening jab about the cold weather and the leaves changing was a jab at me.
Oh, well, you don't have, wait a minute, don't you have leaves at all?
Yeah, between the igloos, we have a few leaves.
Yeah,
Syracuse or something like
that. Well, yeah, no, now you have a commodity driven, generally speaking, a commodity driven market. I mean, you know, you see gold good, Canada's up, you know, metals, materials up, Canada's up. Hey, let's talk about some Canada issues right now. You guys are really pissy about the whole potash issue, aren't you?
Well,
you want, you're not giving that away at any price, it looks like.
Well, we want it. We're looking after our interests. I mean, that's understandable.
So is there a possibility that there's another play? I mean, right now, BHP decided they're going to scrap the deal, which is smart because they weren't getting anywhere, and they're going to do a share buyback instead. Potash actually said, you know, after this deal, which I don't know what the point of this was, we're going to do a share buyback. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe because they think there's maybe something better down the road. Is there a chance that there's maybe a Potash Agrium or there's somebody's going to come up to Mosaic, do you think?
Oh, I think all of those things are a possibility. I think in Canada, though, that they've sort of come to the conclusion that all of these international firms buying up all of the resources in the country or the companies that control the resources is a bad thing for the country in general. I think that comes out of the Falconbridge deal, and you know, there's lots of others where it just seems like foreign companies are coming here and they're buying Canadian companies and they're controlling all of the resources. So there's a natural sort of pushback from that, and it's political, and there's all of the other things. There is a more nationalistic tone that people are saying, you know, a company like Potash, they should be out there buying companies, not being acquired. Right? You know, not going to buy BHP. BHP is
right, too big,
many times the size, but they should be out there buying things instead of just sort of minding their business and waiting to be acquired. And I don't think that they're waiting to be acquired, by the way, but that's just the... That's the feeling here.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's a political angle to it.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it's all bad, to be honest. But.
So let's talk about some specific sectors. And we talked about the financials a little bit, that you really have no faith in, generally speaking. When the financials, let's talk about the banks, I guess, more so.
No faith
in the banks. What about the big players? What about the JPs? What about the Goldmans? What about the whoever else is a Jefferies? What about that whole area?
Well, honestly, I'm always looking for reasons to be long Goldman. I just think Goldman, they have the smartest people and they find a way to make money regardless.
Mm-hmm.
All the others, I want to be short.
Yeah.
I read research reports day after day about people saying they're bullish on Bank of America, and for the life of me, I don't understand it. I don't understand any reason why you'd buy that stock.
I don't get it.
But people, I read so many research reports where people are pounding the table on Bank of America. But my basic strategy is, I'd want to look for places to be long Goldman Sachs. So if it gets sold off on whatever, I'm looking for an opportunity to be long Goldman Sachs and short everything else. I have no faith in the sector at all.
Well, let's kind of give you the same thing back. Let me just switch gears real quickly. GM.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you buy into that at all?
No. Absolutely not.
If you were given the opportunity for the IPO at 33, would you have gotten it? Would you have picked it up?
No.
Okay. No. Let me ask you this question. If you did pick it up at 33, what would you have done with it?
I would have sold it at 35.
Yeah, exactly. Or 34, somewhere in there. Yeah, I mean, it's been coming down. I think a lot of people are really shocked that it's come down. And I'm like, what are you talking? Now, those research reports that you're going to see about Bank of America, you're going to see that about GM shortly.
Yep.
You know that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. They've got a vested interest, right?
Yeah, of course. And obviously, I think the big concern is that isn't GM in the same seat as Citigroup is right now, where the government still owns shares that needs to dump on the market?
Yeah. That's right. So get that supply coming. Sooner or later, it comes.
Yeah, 33% of the New York Stock Exchange volume on Thursday, the day that the GM IPO came out, was GM.
Mm-hmm.
And which goes to show you that everybody was paying attention to that. Listen, the news was enamored with it. It was almost like they were in love and in lust with this whole GM thing. Again, I didn't understand where that came from, but I guess there's some players out there that think this is really important. It's almost ridiculous. Frankly, it's almost a smudge on on the U.S. I would much rather be lauding Ford all day long for what they did rather than that. And if they do the same thing with Chrysler, I'm really going to crawl in a hole. Healthcare. Yeah. What about healthcare? What do you like there? Anything?
Nothing.
Nothing in the healthcare.
Nothing. No, nothing.
Can't put you on services like a Medco. Nothing, huh?
Nothing. Hmm. Those stocks have been basically the same price forever. I don't like them.
Okay. All right. So healthcare isn't good. Utilities? I'm going to give you all the crap first, by the way. Utilities?
Nope. No, nothing.
Nothing utilities. You're not going for yield?
No. Okay. I like energy, and I've been buying some of the energy trusts. That's where I've always gone for yield.
The MLPs?
Pardon me?
The MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships?
Yep.
National Limited Partnerships. Like the Allarians and all those kind of things.
Yeah, I love Kinder Morgan. I mean, I buy that stuff all day long.
Right. Did you see that there's a new ETF, I think it is, that's going to be investing in all of these MLPs?
I saw that.
I'm not sure how that's going to work.
I have no liquidity like the stocks.
I got to tell you something. I am up to my eyebrows in ETFs right now because, I'll tell you why. I have come to realize, especially when it comes to the commodity ETFs, mm-hmm. that it's creating an artificial audience, artificial investment. So when I hear that Alcoa is all in favor of a new aluminum ETF, that they're going to store the aluminum, I'm thinking, what? Wait a minute. We're going to create this bogus demand for aluminum.
Yep.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, it's tail wagging the dog stuff. So...
I mean, and they're going
to. I mean, anybody, they're always in favor of anything that creates an artificial demand for the product.
Right.
Why wouldn't they be?
No, I agree. It's good for Alcoa, don't get me wrong. But I just wonder how good this is over the time because now all of a sudden you have massive amounts of aluminum that's not going to be used for aluminum. It's going to be sitting in, the boxes of aluminum foil somewhere in storage. You know what I mean? Giant crates of aluminum foil that are going to be in storage and owned by the ETF.
Yep.
And I don't even know where they can store this stuff.
Yeah.
At the levels they're talking about it. Okay, so MLPs in that area. What about staples?
I've always sort of liked the Coca-Colas and stuff like that. I think of them as longer-term growth stories. And, I know about the currency issues and all that stuff, but I've liked those. And I've always held a core position in those names.
Right.
For the Cokes, Philip Morris's, stuff like that.
I'm going to get to the good stuff because I know how you work. I know your mind. I know that's why I did the stuff we could throw aside first. Let's get into one of them, consumer discretionary. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, why should these things be doing well from a top-down measure with unemployment being high and all that? But some of the numbers they're putting out are shocking in a good way, except for Sears, of course.
Yeah, some of them are. Well, Sears is a hedge fund, but I mean, some of the other ones, like the Whirlpool and things like that, those stocks, they have a fantastic exposure to emerging markets. Great stories. I mean, I like those.
What about, do you like any of the clothing lines, like Lululemon, or, for example, we really like Ross Stores. We think that is a great story in terms of one of the best square foot earners out there. Who else do we like in this area? Let me look at my list real quick. Coach has been beautiful, huh?
I have a Coach chart right up on my screen. That's why I was just going to mention Coach.
Coach is beautiful.
Yeah, Coach is beautiful. I like any company, any retailer that can. This is not politically correct, but I like any retailer that can sell a premium product and have it produced in China. My wife buys Coach purses, and I was in the store with her. This is maybe 2 years ago, and I'm looking inside the purses, and they look like purses to me.
Right.
But they're $200-$300. I'm thinking they're made in China. It couldn't have cost more than $7 or $8 to make that purse.
Right. It's a beautiful thing.
It's $200 or $300. Beautiful business.
Right.
I'd invest that business all day long.
The other thing is that if you want to think about purses for a second, one is just not enough for any woman.
What makes you think I want to think about purses? Yeah. I see my wife must have 70 purses.
And I'm when not. She asks you when you're going out on a Saturday evening, which one looks better, the black one or the brown one?
The black one or the other black one?
They both look terrific on you. I can't make a decision. All right, so what about, what else do we have left? Energy?
Energy. Love energy. Love energy. Love ConocoPhillips, Kinder Morgan, I already mentioned. I love all of that stuff.
What about?
I believe in, and it goes back to my thesis, I believe that the Federal Reserve is going to inflate the economy. I think they're going to create inflation in all of the wrong places, actually. I think they're going to create inflation in food and energy. And eventually that's going to be a terrible thing. Because, these guys, they think they can control inflation. They think they're just going to sort of wave some magic wand that's just going to go away. And it doesn't go away. It's not quite like that.
There's clearly food inflation, and that's what is the and energy inflation. And that is the – and materials, for that matter.
And materials, yeah.
The input – let's just say this. The input pricing into almost any manufactured goods right now is much higher. Mm-hmm. That's why we're seeing a company that we like, for example, they're a chemical like Lubrizol. For example,
yep.
An Albemarle, I never pronounced that one right. Albemarle, you know who they are? ALB. They just increased.
Yes.
They just increased their fire retardants by 25% across the board, and this is after another 20% of several other lines in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the Lubrizol numbers, they were hurt by input prices, by the way. And this is a common theme, particularly in the energy area right now, or the chemicals area, that you see that companies are being hurt a little bit. DuPont, they talked about input prices are on the rise. What's mm-hmm. eventually going to happen, there's no question about this, is that they're going to actually go and start raising their prices to the consumer. And food prices, I mean, just look at sugar, just look at wheat, just look at all of that. What's interesting is McDonald's just increased across the board, all their prices on mm-hmm. their menu items in China. The mm-hmm. food inflation in China is off the hook, and that's what's worrying them the most.
Yeah.
And they may put in food pricing censorship, if you will, or sanctions and limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So do we like the general ag companies? I mean, a Cavallo avocado company? Do we like just the fertilizer companies? A Deer? Where do we go with that? Monsanto has been a dog.
Yeah. I actually like Monsanto, but it's been a dog. You're right. I mean, I like them all. I like the farm equipment guys. I like the fertilizers. I like the seeds. I like them all. I think that this is a much bigger thing that they're doing. I mean, it's Bernanke's doing a science project. He thinks that he's going to create inflation. He thinks it's going to create inflation in the right places, and that's going to create jobs and all of the other stuff and, betterment for the global economy. I think what they're going to do is they're going to create inflation in food and energy, and materials. And that's going to cause this massive bubble that they can't control. And you're going to get higher rates longer term. But that's all longer term stuff. Short term, I think all the stocks are going up. All the stocks that are dollar sensitive. So the dollar goes down, these stocks go up. All those stocks are going to keep going up. So I think the dollar is going to go down longer term.
So this is there's an interesting point there about the dollar I want to get to, because the dollar versus the euro is something that we've been looking at. And the euro is actually a much weaker currency right now than the dollar, mm-hmm. but the dollar is being pushed down by Bernanke. So I'm envisioning this giant Petri dish, mm-hmm. and Bernanke's got the microscope over it, and he's kind of like prodding it and pushing it around all the junk inside of there to see how it plays out. Is that how it is?
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it. I think that they've got this science project, and they think it's going to work out. I don't think it's going to work out. I'm for certain it's not going to work out. But short term, it's going to create a bubble. And that's what they want to do. They're going to create a bubble. They think they can control the bubble. I think they can't. But it's going to create a lot of wealth. And agriculture, I think, is the big one. But I think it's going to just create a tremendous amount of wealth when these prices just start going through the roof. And people are going to say, you know, what? These prices don't make any sense. You know, there's no demand. There's this, there's that. And they're going to keep going up.
So can I also throw into the mix a couple things? First of all, it sounds like you're on the Jim Rogers camp.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess I am.
Yeah. So, all right. So let me throw this out. One of the things that we like to play on this, and as a matter of fact, there were some great reports put out this week. I think J.P. Morgan put out a really interesting report on this. But the beyond the ags. So you have to get the ags from one place to another. Mm-hmm. And trucking costs, because of energy costs, are going up dramatically. But yet train and railroad costs are staying reasonable. Although they're passing on some of the higher costs, and very well, because it's a much more efficient methodology. We like Kansas City Southern in particular, mm-hmm. because Kansas City,
I like that one.
Because they have the only direct route from a major Mexico port, and that's really good for the train for their particular area. Plus, they do a lot of ag movement. The other thing is, have you looked at GBX, which is Greenbrier? They make the trains, the cars. Mm-hmm. They actually produce these things. And we actually talked to some management, and they have a tremendous amount. I think 25% of their cars that they manufacture for grain and for ags. They also have coal and steel and a few others, but, you know, because they're built differently, obviously.
Yeah.
So GBX is interesting. It's a thinly traded stock. We don't own it, but it's something that we've looked at several times because it is so thin. To be honest with you, we missed that big move that it had, and mm-hmm. we were right there looking at it, you know, saying we really like this, but just missed it.
Yeah.
And it popped. All right, so let's transfer over to technology, mm-hmm. which I'm sure there's a laundry list of names that you like. We talk about the ones that everybody knows, the Netflix, the Salesforce, the ones that, you know, the culty groupies. Let's talk mm-hmm. about something that's not on that list. You know, is there anything?
Well, I mean, I'm not really that sort of guy. I hate to say that I'm sort of a groupie, but I like the cultish stocks. So. You know, I like the Salesforce and the Apples and Googles and those names. I wish I was smart enough to figure out which stocks make all the little chips and bits and stuff and all these products. But I've always been a guy that just bought the bigger trend. So I'm buying Apple. So I'm sort of the first derivative guy. I'm not really saying, well,
you're not going to go behind it and say, okay, let's see. No. Apple's now going with Verizon. They'll need a Qualcomm chip, and therefore we're going to buy Qualcomm.
I own Qualcomm, but...
Maybe not for that reason.
No, I own it because it looks like it's going up.
Right,
so.
I hear you. So
I'm not really that kind of that guy. And don't get me wrong, I wish I was that guy in many ways, but I'm more... You know, I hate to put myself in that camp, but I'm more sort of a groupie. I like the...
It's fine.
I like the Apple stock. I mean, yeah. I like the Apple story.
There's nothing not to like about the Apple story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little overloved, but, you know, that happens.
Yeah, but the overloved just helps it get, you know, kind of put back in the right place all the time. You know, let's look at Salesforce came out with earnings this week. And frankly, you know, if this was any other stock except Salesforce, you would think that it would take down a bit of its movement. It came out with a 1 cent beat on EPS. It came out with a nice beat on revenues. But that's not technically, you know, what most of the time you want to see on one of these high flyers. What was, I think, really the play here is that the CEO comes on, and I listened to the conference call last night, or whatever mm-hmm. it was a couple nights ago, and what was fascinating was that the numbers were a very small segment in the beginning. I mean, very small segment, a couple of numbers thrown out and all that. Then a compelling sideshow presentation of how great Salesforce is and how many customers they have and all that. Usually you get that after the first guy goes and tells about all the dry information, right?
Yeah.
But they start this off with a parade, a hurrah fest for Salesforce, you know, and creating this kind of rah-rah, sis-boom-ba, you know, this is the reason why things are so great, kind of putting the rest of things into the who cares land, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at the real numbers. So I think that, you know, congratulations, by the way, for a great way of doing that and being able to understand that you need to not only provide numbers, but boost investor sentiment, you know, because after that, I'm like, yeah, you know, it was, whoa. We actually shorted into the earnings and kind of, we just did a little one to see if we could get a little tip on the downside, which didn't happen. We cut it real quickly. But, you know, I think that when you look at some of these companies, like a Salesforce, like a Netflix, when we, you know, 100 guys are saying, hey, Netflix is dead. Netflix can go down, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, but it's picked up right afterwards.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's very hard to short it, as you mentioned, unless you fast.
Yeah, I was short Netflix, and actually, a mutual friend of ours, John Markman, gave me a tip. He said, you know, he did some historical work and said that, you know, this stock always goes up in this time frame and you can't be short. And I said, well, okay. So I covered my short, and actually I bought some calls on it and made a lot of money on Netflix when after they had the earnings, if you want to call it a beat. I wouldn't really call it a beat. If you look behind those numbers, they weren't very good at all. But
that's the same thing I'm talking about. I mean, it's just, you know, as long as they come out, if any other company is, and this goes back to Peter Lynch, doesn't it? Where he talks about he buys stocks that he sees that people are using, that people know. Because I can mention a stock to you like Acme Packet. I'm not sure if you follow that stock at all.
Yeah, I do.
Love that stock. We have a nice position in that stock. We think that is really potential for if there's somebody that wants to really get into the voice over IP, you know, Cisco would be the perfect play to buy this stock. But even if you don't buy the stock, if it's not taken out, great numbers, great technical move, really great. But, you know, most people are not going to know what an Acme Packet is. Mm-hmm. So you know what a Netflix is. You know what a, you know, think of all the other, you know, what a Redbox is or you know, the company that makes them, which is, I forgot their name. The other, I'll think of it. You know what a Sprint is, for example. You know what AT&T is. You know what Apple is. You know Motorola. You know, you kind of know what a Chipotle is. You know, these are things that you know, so you're going to buy. Oh, I love the stock. I love Chipotle's. They have the best burrito. Let's buy 100 shares. You know, I mean, that's kind of like what it is. I love the iPad. Oh, buy me 50 shares of Apple. That's kind of like what it's like.
Yeah, I agree.
And I totally understand that, so that creates it. I mean, I know people that get into a car, oh my God, the Ford is fantastic, let's buy Ford. So I think that's part of the whole play there. What if, what is your view on something that we just recently shorted, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters? Are you familiar with them?
I just see the stock going up. Well, I'm not making a call, I see it going up, but I've just seen the stock in passing. It's not really one that I've traded. I don't want to say I don't understand it, because I do understand the business and everything. I just don't understand why it's gone up so much. I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's a Gillette story is the reason, by the way. You know, it's all about they make the razor and the razor and then the blades are made somewhere else and they get royalties on it.
Yeah.
But now there's competition because Starbucks is coming out with something and there's some accounting, let's call it irregularities. That recently happened. I love it. For short, accounting irregularities are your best friend.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so
or the CFO leaves.
Oh, CFO leaves unexpectedly. Unexpectedly.
Unexpectedly leaves.
Right.
That's always a good one.
Oh, 2 days before earnings.
Yeah.
Right? That's a good one.
Yeah.
So all right. So let's finish up here. Give us your point numbers and what you're doing. So we said you're bullish now. 1175-ish is the kind of breakdown point. It's got to close under there and stay under there a little bit, a couple of days. Before you get loosen up on your long positions. And then when do you get short? Where does that happen? Does that happen?
To be honest, I am very, very hesitant to short stocks into the end of the year.
I'm with Bernanke with the lighter there.
Yeah. But every year, I mean, there's been there's been exceptions when the market's gone down into the year end, but They've been few and far between. And I will tell you that every single year, it comes October or whatever, and I'm looking at my charts, and they say, geez, this stuff looks terrible. It's like the market's going to crash. And every year, it goes up. And then I'm scratching my head thinking, why? Now, why would I have shorted the market when I know it goes up at the end of the year? So I hear the bear story. I understand the bear story. I agree with most of it. I just don't think the market's going to go down between now and the end of the year.
The only derail that I see is not earnings and company-specific. Well, maybe some company-specific issues here and there. I just think the only thing, and I'm not suggesting short here. I'm not suggesting that at all. The only thing that's going to continually be an overhang is this whole European issue.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I could, and maybe some China issue. You know, the U.S.-based stocks right now, I think, are set up pretty well to be just, if nothing else, stable. And I think there's a lot of complacency out there. We can see that by the VIX, that people are not selling, they're not buying. Volume is kind of like dead.
Agree.
You know, people like, if it goes down, okay, it's going to come back up. If it goes up, okay, fine. There's not a lot of play on the inside. It's kind of the outside plays. You know, it's kind of the edges. All right, so what about on the getting longer, we'll call it that way. What is like the double thumbs up? Over 1225 again?
Over 1225. I'd say it's 1230 really, but we're close enough. If we get over 1230, I would say you got to be long. I've got a, you'll probably laugh at this, but I've got a number on the S&P, and if we can get above 1230, and that number is 1361, 1361. That would be the top of a bigger channel, and that would be the channel that started back in the 2009 lows. So if you just draw a line, again, pretty simple stuff the way I do it, but if you just draw a line through the lows and make a parallel line through the tops, you get 1361 on the S&P. And
I have no problem with that, only because that with the, I guess I'll say it this way, can't fight the Fed. Let's just say it that way. Can't fight the Fed. The now that we have a little bit of road. Hey, what I thought was really interesting? A lot of people thought there was going to be this great market run after the Republicans came into office. I would say, with the exception of the fact that we have Bernanke coming in with extraneous measures, the market essentially has been down since the Republican election. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all. I mean, I think that it's a rhetoric thing. They're coming in there and they're talking about a lot of pain. They're not going to do anything. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sympathetic to what the Republicans want to do, but the reality is doing some of the things they want to do is going to involve a fantastic amount of pain, and you don't get elected by talking about pain.
Right.
And you really don't get elected by inflicting pain on people. So they're talking about austerity. Austerity is not good for the market.
Austerity has not hurt Europe so far.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the economy or the stock market?
Well, I guess the stock market.
Yeah. The economy, the European economy is terrible. Europe's a mess.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. That's why we feel compelled to be short that market.
It's a mess. I mean, what they're doing there is, the euro, I don't need to tell you this, but the euro is a complete mess. I mean, it shouldn't even be in existence. It's just, it doesn't make any sense, and it should have gone away a long time ago. But, austerity is not good for economies, and it's really not very good for stock markets, to be honest. When you talk austerity, you're talking about pain, and people don't want the general populace out there with less money,
right?
They want them with more money.
Yep.
Even if it's not real money,
right? No, it doesn't matter. It could be monopoly money as long as it spends.
Yeah. A chicken in every pot,
right?
That's great for the market.
I was thinking about this, that I think that you as a Canadian know a lot about U.S. U.S. politics and all that. I would venture to say most Americans have no idea what's going on in Canada.
Yeah, they're not missing much.
When we think of Canada, we think of cold weather, socialized medicine, or at least and high taxes, And if you're really, really familiar with certain areas, you may know what Carnazal is, for example. Are you familiar with Carnazal?
No, I'm not.
See, you're from a different area. That's why. It's almost like a Slim Jim. It's made with the smoked meat. Smoked meat is, right?
Yeah, I know what that Slim Jim is.
But it's like a Slim Jim, but it's like the smoked meat. It's delicious. It's like a little hot doggy thing that they serve on the tables in some of the delis up there. And if you haven't tried smoked meat.
Is that a Montreal smoked meat thing?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. And it's like most people down here know what corned beef is, and they're used to that. Smoked meat in Canada is similar.
Yeah.
But it has a little bit more clovey stuff going on with it. And it's a little sweeter in a way. But basically, the people of Canada love, tell me if I'm wrong, love their smoked meat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's absolutely a big one, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. All right, in closing, I want to mention again, you can always check out all the information. Just go to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and check out the show notes, and we're going to put links to where you could find Terry, all about what he does, his comments, his blog, everything is available. He writes for thestreet.com, and of course, the managing director of Greyhawk Hedge Fund, which is available, I guess, to qualified investors, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that's available to you as well. And we'll put all this. And Terry, always a great, great conversation because you have, what I like about you is you have your numbers kind of written in the sand, if you will. You know where the points are, and you're not going to say, okay, well, I'm going to let it go a little bit more, and then to the point that you have to capitulate.
No.
You know, you're getting to a point that, okay, there's my number. And here's the top, you know, okay, I'll give it a little breathing room there, but that is what, and then I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. The very straightforward strategy so that emotions don't get in the way, which is a big problem, of course, in much of the amateur, novice, and individual investor's life. I think emotions are scary, but let's also admit, as money managers, that sometimes emotions are tough to kind of push aside.
They are.
So
it's tough. There's lots of fetal moments.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Terry Bedford, have a great Thanksgiving. Well,
yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
You do it. You've imported that.
Yeah, I've imported that. I watch the football like everybody else, like every other Canadian. We watch the football on Thursdays.
What about the Canadian Football League? How's that? Wait. You watch the football on Thursdays. Did you see the Dolphin game?
Yeah,
that was awful. As a Miami Dolphin fan, you know that was an embarrassment.
Oh, you guys got a bad team.
Yeah, we have a bad team. No kidding. We've had a bad team for a long time. But we do have the Heat. Did you see that game? 123-80 was the last.
Hey. You can't talk to me about the Heat because they took away. We had Chris Bosh here in Toronto, and you took him away.
Well, come on down, and you and I will go to a Heat game.
All right.
And then you can say hello to him. We'll bring him some smoked meat and carnazzle. we'll wave a flag and sing O Canada to him, okay?
All right.
All right, buddy. Well, I'll see you soon, okay. Terry. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Terry Bedford on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Always enjoy having Terry on. Great guest with great information. A couple things I want to let you know about that's important. A couple of guests that are coming up. We have Das coming up. Now, everybody loves when he comes on. We're going to be talking about, the week after, all about the issues concerning Europe again, kicking the can down the road, the detox economy, the Botox economy, as he calls it, detoxing the Botox economy. And really the focus on what's going to happen. You know, we talk about how right now Ireland's in the focal point and the crosshairs of the bond vigilantes, Portugal next. We'll see what happens there. And next week, you've asked for it several times, a great guest, very, very popular, only been on once before, John Malden with Millennium Wave. And if you haven't heard him, this is something that you don't want to miss. He is a great speaker of things to come. A great writer, and a good investor, a great investor. I mean, just really, he has his finger to the pulse in terms of the outlook, we'll say. So I think that's something that you really want to pay attention to and to make sure that you do, in fact, listen in. Now, for those of you that don't do this, I don't know how you actually get your downloads, but over at iTunes, very easy just to kind of hook in and get your downloads directly through iTunes. Just type my name in iTunes. Also, you can do it on your portable device, whether it's Android, and there's a lot of different services that allow you to actually bring in what's called the RSS feed. Now, if you didn't know, by the way, if you want to get the emails on a daily basis of all the things that we're writing about, you could just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. On the top right, it says add me to the email list. And what happens is you'll get a compilation of all the different things we're writing about on a daily basis that will come in a, you know, one email. So you may have three different posts we talk about, maybe, I don't know, some links and reading that may be interesting, or possibly even we talk about, you know, bond issues, stocks you should be looking at, but you get that right away. Also over at Twitter, if you add me to your Twitter account, and I'm at Andrew Horowitz. What happens is every time we post an update on the disciplinedinvestor.com, automatically it smacks out to Twitter, hits it, and you get that alert right away. So there's a couple of different ways to get that information for yourselves. The other thing I want to mention to you is this. It's coming on the end of the year. A lot of people have been writing me. I must tell you, really, it's been quite overwhelming lately how many people have been saying, hey, you know what? I think it's time that I get back into the market. So many people have been on the sideline for a long time, but they don't know what to do. Should they be long? Should they be short? But they want to do something. They want to get in the action. Again, it may be a long short strategy, whatever. Let me tell you, that's what we do. A lot of people are confused, and a lot of people are concerned with, you know, what's the effect of the long-term inflation rate due to the Fed's new policy. Some people say, hey, what's going on? I think the emerging market's hot. Well, these are the things that we do. So if you're interested in that, you can just simply check out the 14-minute virtual tour and let us handle it for you. But by going there, you find out all the things that we do, how we do it, how we run our money, how we manage money for clients. And at the same time, you can find out all about the transparency that we allow or have access to so that you know everything that's going on in your particular portfolio and what we're thinking. We have a private blog just for our clients, which is something that most investment advisors don't do. But you get to know exactly why we're doing what and what we're holding, et cetera, for your portfolio. There's a $50,000 minimum. And I'll tell you right now, the way things are going, we may increase that minimum. So if you've been on the fence, probably now's a good time to think about getting involved. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, check out the little area that says hedge fund without a hedge fund. There's a thing, a little box you can click on there, and you can get all the information that you have to check out about how we manage money over here at Horowitz & Company. All right, and finally, I want to wrap up with a couple of things. We have the Fed minutes coming out next week, which is very important to take a look at. Obviously, they're going to be pretty negative on things to support their quantitative easing strategy. I will tell you, though, that last week when we saw a combination of manufacturing numbers, one that was very poor, the New York Empire State manufacturing was horrible. The region's manufacturing numbers dipped down very, very low, down to, I think, a negative 11 when a plus 5 was expected. But the Philly area manufacturing came out really strong. We also saw a dip in unemployment claims, which was good. And forget about the continuing claims because that information is totally wrong. The continuing claims don't usually include the extended benefits and all that. We've also seen a roadblock right now where the Congress is not going to be taking up the idea of extending unemployment claims once again and for more. And that could be, I think, a total cost of about $14 billion for another, I think it's 90 days. But right now, it seems there's going to be a lot of people that are running out of their benefits very shortly. And it doesn't look like a renewal is in the cards at this exact moment. We'll see what happens with that. And so that's a couple things that are going on there. Then we have, finally, the news out of probably next week, I would say, the news out of Ireland and what's going to happen with either a bailout for the banks only or possibly even a capital infusion to the entire sovereign area. Now, the banks only are going to cost a lot less, of course. You know, when we're talking about just bailing out the banks, it's only going to cost, $10 to $30 billion. But, you know, that's a lot better than $100 billion. But yet, at the same time, realize that the region continues to be in a financial struggle. And now that we have Austria starting to balk at giving more money to Greece because Greece is not holding up their end of the bargain, you know, hopefully we're going to have these countries hold the other countries that are requiring the bailouts to have their feet held to the fire for their commitments to financial discipline, you know, whether it's through austerity, whether it's through taxes, whatever it is. The financial discipline in order to get their books and house in order legitimately, is supremely important. And I think that right now the big issue that we're dealing with is that we have a lot of questions with that and a lot of uncertainty. So with that, I think that next week we'll have some kind of a resolution. A lot of that is baked into the pie right now. There is some concern that maybe that Ireland not asking is a technicality that they're going to be pressed upon to actually take to calm the markets. And there's a lot of talk back and forth of whether they need it or they just should take it, just a preventative medicine, or if it's something they really need to have now. Of course, Ireland's saying they don't need it right now. Everybody else saying, yes, you do. You know, mommy, I don't want to take my medicine. Yes, you do. Open wide, you know. And if that doesn't work, hold their nose and their mouth eventually opens and shove the spoon right down. That's kind of what it looks like they're doing right now in terms of their process with the EU and the European Union. We'll see what happens. We'll also see what happens when Congress reconvenes. And we have a shortened week next week. Probably we'll see a lot of lackluster trading going on, but there's always an opportunity. One of those things you could do is check out some of the stocks that we recommend over at DH Unplugged. There's a place there. And if you have any questions at all, of course, just write into me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Next week, John Malden. I look forward to that. And I look forward to you having a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope your turkey is plump. And I hope that you enjoy the time with your family if you do or are doing so. And spend some real quality time with them before you have to return to your job, etc. Take the time to really enjoy yourself. Watch the Thanksgiving Day Parade and, of course, all those great college games that will be on. We look forward to it, and we'll see you real soon. Thanks a lot for joining me. Episode number 188, The Disciplined Investor Podcast is completed. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.